Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Winners and Losers from the LFC Day Trippers. I'm Gav, that's Kev, Phil and Davo. I've worked out that the only way that that intro does not work is if you're doing a show with about 11 points on you, which I currently am. And it's literally gone through my brain for the last 45 seconds, but that's where we are. Phil, how are you?
I'm smashing, Gavin. Smashing.
Okay. Good form?
Smashing. I'm in great form. The best. It's been the best NFL free agency forever. Ever. It's like okay, I can't stop watching the television.
So it's all about the NFL really for you. Nothing else.
Ah, yeah, look, this is just, it's great. Imagine it's like transfer deadline day every day for a week. It's the best ever, it is.
Okay, good stuff. He's in good form. he'll snap us all out of that in about 5 minutes. Don't worry about it. Davo, how are you?
Yeah, grand, Gaff. Not a bother.
Good stuff. And Kev, how are you?
I'm very good. Very, very good. Very good.
Okay, well, it's 10:05 at night. We're going to have a right go of getting this done in an hour because I don't even know if I'll last that long. So let's see how we get on. Winners and losers. Kev, Phil and Davo have picked a winner each and they've picked a loser each. And I'm sure Phil has found some mad fucking sport that he's into this week and he let us know about it towards the end. We'll also talk about our charity partner, Failicon. We'll talk about BetMe and we'll also talk about a VPN offer that we have for you. We had got a couple of weeks ago. It's back and it's a really good offer. So we'll talk about that at some stage as well. So I'm going to start with a
VPN.
Winner.
Neil, I must be back.
No. Really good to keep you on, trust me. It's not.
Svensson.
Don't. Please don't. I don't need all the emails and fucking stuff, really.
The DMs.
Oh, the DMs and everything. Fucking hell. Phil, we're going to start with winners this week. We're going to start with you because you're in good form. Who is your winner of the week?
My winner of the week, right, bar none, nobody even gets close to this, is the Manchester City commercial team, right? They've now got Manchester City as the most, top of the Deloitte richest list, highest commercial revenues in world football. They've managed to do that by growing more than any other club has managed to do over the past 12 months, despite a global pandemic going on. And they've managed to do this while utilizing only 56% of all the commercial revenue comes from their own companies. I think that's incredible. I think they must be having a great time out there in the wherever the hell it is. Where is it? Abu Dhabi that owns them, or Dubai, or where? Yeah. Abu Dhabi. It's fair, all above board, completely legit. Manchester City are now the world's most powerful and richest club, voted by pure commercial means alone, surpassed Barcelona, Real Madrid. Like, think about this. In a year, they've surpassed Barcelona, Real Madrid, Manchester United, Bayern Munich. They have companies that don't even have websites because they're so exclusive and you can't even book them. They're just a magic companies that exist. You have to have a special key to get in there. And it's fantastic. It's going to be a Netflix series, isn't it?
Is this off the back of every club in world football losing money during the COVID pandemic and Man City making 100 million?
Yep. nothing to see here. It's phenomenal stuff. And to think that they learned their lesson after FFP and promised that they'll play by the rules and they are the best boys in the world and they've gone off and done incredible deals. And they have a full house every week in their 87,000-seater stadium, which only houses 55,000 seats. But they get them all in there with a special screen on the roof.
How have they become... this is gen- I know you're saying a lot of this in jest, right?
I'm not.
No, you are a little bit, but for you, like,
it's amazing.
No, I'm not saying what you're saying is incorrect. But how do Man City, as a football club, become the richest, most, you know, the club in the world that is earning the most money out of them all? How that just doesn't make any sense to me.
Doesn't make any sense to anyone else.
I don't care how rich they are with regards to their owners, but is this list based on money generated, or is it based on your value in tandem with your owner's wealth? They're not making more money. They can't be making more money than Liverpool, Manchester United, Barcelona, Real Madrid. They simply can't.
They can't if they're doing what they're doing. They're making up commercial deals. That's exactly what they're doing. Now, listen. Phil, Kev, you three, more intelligent than me. Is there not some competition authority that's like, see, you can't just come in and say, listen, we're after signing a deal with Qatar Airways and they're sponsoring us now for £1 billion for our short sponsor. There's some sort of competition authority, isn't there, or where it says they value it. You can't just put your own value on it, can you, Kev?
No, you can't. The thing is, they can because they've done it. Anytime that it's ever challenged, they'll go through the courts, and with creative accounting, you can make anything look like anything on paper, but it doesn't pass the sniff test. You know what I mean? It's just all kinds of wrong. But the way it's supposed to work is the sponsorship deals are supposed to be on par with your competition. So if Liverpool have a shirt sponsor for X amount of money, Man City's can't go 10 times more than that's worth, because it just doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense. Especially when the owners of the company who's doing the sponsoring also own the club. That's just financial doping on epic scale. Mm. But anytime this ends up in a courtroom, they'll just outspend everybody. Mm. And they'll force their will on it. And unfortunately, look, it's just a sad reality of the Premier League. They took the Queen's shilling, you know, and they wanted to be the big boys. They wanted to take over from Serie A, and the only way to do that was to plow money through the league, left, right, and centre. They didn't care where it came from. Hence, you got Abramovich, and now you've got Dubai, and you have the ones at Newcastle as well. And they will just keep plowing money into it. And as long as people are willing to look the other way, which the league are, because they're the most dominant league in the world, there's no one going to do anything about it. The rest of the league have just either, you know, has put up or shut up. And there's no one big enough to challenge it, unfortunately.
So for me, this is just simply creating the path and the runway for their fellow Emirati owners to avoid whatever semblance of what was left in FFP that still made sense. So the local rules, the Premier League rules, there's nothing that can be implemented. We know UEFA have balls it up in terms of losing their court case with Manchester City, and City put two fingers up to them. Said, fuck is, we can do what we like now. And that's exactly what they're doing. They basically went from a revenue of $549 million, which was still pumped up with mad pretendy deals last year, to over $600 million this year. Bigger leap than anybody else has made. Like, we're talking about, like, if you look at Liverpool last year were fifth in the list, right? They fall into seventh in the list. And in that time, their revenue dropped by 9 million. That's commercial revenue they generated over the course of the year. Yeah. That's because of the money that was lost due to TV revenue streams, because of the pandemic, everything that was in the reporting period. However, City have managed to go from a commercial revenue of $549 million in sixth place to fourth place with over $645 million. It's mad. It's insane, right? And the deals that they've done are made up pretend deals. Like the pretend tails. They're not even trying to
that's
hide.
The thing, take Real Madrid or Manchester United, and you look at Real Madrid and go, oh, they signed a big deal with. Do you remember they were sponsored by Bwin, weren't they? And I think they're sponsored by the Emirates now on their jerseys. I think Real Madrid are, right? But when you're seeing deals coming out, you go, fuck, they're at the signing a deal with Coca-Cola. They were known companies, like they were known entities. You know, Liverpool's one with Standard Chartered going back, 10 years ago now, probably a little bit more, was kind of, who the fuck are they? And then you look into them and they were like, oh, it's a big American hedge fund company, wherever the fuck they are, right? Or insurance company, whatever they are. I don't even know what Standard Chartered do, right? But I know they give Liverpool loads of money, but they're a company. Right, and then like you look at United and they go, they've signed a big deal with DHL, or they've signed a big deal with fucking, I don't know,
Chevy,
Vodafone,
Chevrolet,
whatever it is, going back years, Vodafone, all the O2, if you remember all this stuff, right? But City seem to have all these things, and nobody knows what any of the companies are. Look, I don't see a sponsorship deal being announced by Man City where you go, oh yeah, that's the crowd that, like Barcelona have done one with Spotify. They'll sponsor the name of the new camp. And you go, everyone knows Spotify. Now, don't get me wrong. There's big companies out there that could come along and go, we're giving $200 million to Man City for the naming rights of their training ground for the next 10 years, right? AXA done it with Liverpool, right? And you go, oh, yeah, I know them. Or I don't know them, but let's have a look at them. And you go, oh, yeah, they are fucking big. But genuinely, I'm looking at, like, I don't even know who these sponsors are. I don't even know where they're coming from. It's just unbelievable to think that Manchester City... And anyone can believe that Manchester City are generating, right, more money in a commercial sense and are more commercially viable and attractive to than Liverpool, Manchester United, Barcelona, and Real Madrid. It's just not happening. For me, it's absolutely mental to think that anybody with that amount of money, if they have it, are to think of Manchester City are a much more attractive place to place your money than
but
anywhere
all
else.
This,
it's just
all
mental.
This is doing now is just laying the groundwork for the next three transfer windows. That's all this has done. They've now put in place the funds to go and buy Haaland, fund it legally, and then anything else they want to buy on top of him, they've put the funds in there to buy these players that they want to bring in and rebuild again. That's all this is. It's just creative accounting to put in place money so that they can go and spend it. It's not legit. You go and look at any of the company's websites, look where they're based, and look at who the owners of those companies are in relation to the owners of Man City, and look at the relationship between the two.
Kev, and going on from that, like 56% of their income comes from Visit Abu Dhabi, Next Gen, which is owned by the United Arab Emirates Ting Fund, right? Expo 2020 Dubai, and the Emirates Palace. I'm not even trying to hide it. Like you might think I was saying tongue in cheek that for me the winners of the week with the Manchester City commercial team, but it's not, because by winning their case with UEFA, right? Everyone was worried, oh, maybe they won't, maybe they'll play a bit by the ball and try to bury these, but they haven't. Two fingers, I'm making up pretend companies, pretend deals, and we will pump our revenues up to whatever. So whatever version of FFP they try to implement, it won't matter a fuck, because our company will be pumped up to be generating so much pretend commercial revenue, we will be able to spend as much as we like when we feel like it. And that what they've laid out, they've set out the plan for PSG, for... whoever else, what other teams? PSG, the Qataris, and then the other one, the biggest one of them all. They've basically laid out the roadmap for Newcastle United to attain whatever they want to attain, because Newcastle United will now be able to pump as much money into pretend clubs, into pretend commercial sponsorship deals to make sure there's no FFP implications for them, or whatever version of FFP, because UEFA said they're going to bring in another version. It doesn't make a difference. You've opened the door. The horse has gone so far across the field. There's no horses left. You've now got cows in your stables instead of horses. Legos maybe helps it.
And the thing is, like, out of that 600 million quid, how much revenue are you making from match day? Or, you know, is there, like, because they must be making about 8 quid out of match day if this sort of money is being put in for you know, these sponsors. Listen, you know, Rory says they're the most outrageous one was the Emirates Palace Hotel partnership with Man City. What commercial benefit does a luxury hotel in Dubai get from giving money to a football club in Manchester? You know.
But listen, Gav, they'll be telling you, like, match day revenue, they'll be telling you is X amount, even if it's not. Do you know what I mean? Like, they'll be telling you, ah, we've this tunnel club and we're getting X amount off this, X amount off that. Jesus, League of Ireland, they used to put in the fucking lower attendance because they didn't want to pay the fucking tax. Yeah. When the tax man came looking at it. Now it's City are the other way around. They're telling you there's fucking 60,000.
Well, it's like the time Arsenal.
70,000 there in a 50,000 seater stadium.
It's 67.5 million per year from Etihad to sponsor their own stadium. Says
you. Them.
But that's the thing is it always reminds you of the one where, do you remember Arsenal played a home game in the league and there was like fucking nobody there, and it was like the official attendance tonight is 59,955 and we're like, mate, there's not only 80 seats fucking empty here,
exactly.
But like, I don't know what the fuck you're thinking, but what they do is they just if you bought a season ticket, you know, or you've bought something,
you're there.
Like, if you've opted into a ticket scheme and not bought a ticket then and not turned up, they still put you down as in. It's absolutely mad. I agree with you, Phil. I think there's literally no stopping this. The only way it stops is if they get bored, right? Or something happens in the world where their wealth is massively hit by something and they decide, right, this is too much money we're pumping in here, which I can't ever see happen. But I think you're dead right. I think it's laid a roadmap to... in particular,
they won't
Newcastle.
Get bored.
They won't get bored. The chance of it is slim. But
the thing is, there's a reason they won't get bored. They know that the oil industry only has a shelf life of maybe 30 to 50 years. They have to diversify their country's income. That's why they're delving into sports and tourism and trying to spread out as much as possible to get as many other income streams away from oil and gas revenue. They've been doing it for years, and they're going to carry on doing it. Football is just another mechanism to spread their version of their income, you know, the way they can generate money in the future. You know, this plan has been set in motion for a decade or more, and it's going to evolve out into so many other different sports and revenue streams that it's just going to be the way it is. And there's not an awful lot anyone can do about it now.
I think it's just absolutely mental, and like I said, the only way you stop it is if something happens where they want to stop themselves, because what do you do? And Newcastle, whether you agree or disagree with the owners being there or how they got hold of that club or whatever, they are looking at it going, yeah, we can do it. And they're probably in a much better position to do it than City, because City have blasted the red tape out the door. Yeah. So Newcastle is going to drive right through that gap now and go, we can do whatever we want, because we've seen what's going on with Man City. We've seen nothing happens. We don't need to take little tender steps here, there, and everywhere. They've done it all for us. So it's absolutely bad. But I get your shout, Phil, on the Man City commercial team, because for everybody else to lose money and Man City to post 100 million profit at the same time is absolutely unfucking believable. Really is, like, it's absolutely madness. Moving on, Davo, loser of the week, please.
Oh, loser of the week. Yeah, look, you can spend as least amount of time on this if you want. Just first off, my loser of the week is the Nottingham Forest fans.
Right.
Or, sorry, I'll rephrase that. The certain number of Nottingham Forest fans who broke out the greatest hits that they always sing when Liverpool arrived into town. And the reason I picked them is the Nottingham Forest Fans Trust laid two wreaths at the Hillsborough Memorial there during the week. Because it was coming up that we were playing them, obviously, in the Cup. And then they left 97 seats free in the City Ground during the night as a memorial to the 97 fans. And then, I didn't pick it up. It was Sligo. Sean and our group said, lads, the greatest hits are getting sung here by these Forest fans. I didn't hear it. But I was flicking around Twitter then after the game, and obviously Gav, Daniel Story has been on plenty of times with you. He is a journalist and he's a big Forest fan, and he's working there. And he just came out, he'd not the kind of hiding that he was asked about it. He said, I heard an awful lot of poverty songs being sung, he says, which I hate. And I heard one rendition of Always the Victims. Then he says, that's what I heard. That could have been more, or what I thought I heard, he said. Could have been more, could have been less. So listen, I don't get it. I really listen. I'm not from Liverpool. Obviously, it'll hit harder for people that are from there. You obviously have the poverty stuff. I think it was Leicester fans were at it, and then seemingly there's more fuel banks in Leicester than there is in Merseyside. It was brought up after it. Maybe, but that's not a point scoring thing. That listen, there's fuel banks all over England, I'm sure. And listen, we're not fucking great ourselves over here with the way things are. So yeah, look, we can spend as little time as you want on it. I just thought it needs to stop. It's the same shite. It'll be the same. Seemingly, I've seen more stuff on Twitter. I think some of the fans that go to all the games were saying probably every fan base bar maybe two don't engage in it, but everyone else does. The poverty stuff and all that, and it's just fucking this day and age where we are. There's a war in Ukraine, there's everything else, and you're still listening to this shite from away fans. So, like I said, I'm not tired on all the Forest fans with that. I'm a traditionalist. I'd love to see Forest get back up. I was 10 when the Premier League started. Forest were in it. Sheringham, me and Wow, and all these quality players. Brian Clough was the manager. I think they're a huge club, and I'd love to see them get back up. I think they'd bring an awful lot back to the league, but Jesus, they can bin them fans that were at that yesterday if they do.
Hannah Alone says there was a Forest fan on last night's stream being casually racist. They really are letting themselves down. This person did come across as a Nottingham Forest fan, but you can't absolutely be sure, because there is people that come into this chat and pretend to be something that they're not, just to store a pot. With regards to the Forest fans, yeah, the Forest Trust went to Anfield during the week, laid the two reads, and actually gave a book to, I think it was Margaret Aspinall, were basically kind words from Nottingham Forest fans that were at Hillsborough on the day, or, you know, may not have been, but wanted to pass on some, you know, nice messages. And it was a really nice thing to see outside Anfield during the week. But, like, Phil, you know, I know you kind of, you don't just skip over this. You kind of go, look, what can you do about their arseholes? But how see-through is it, like, transparent is it that this is going to happen every week, Phil? You know, like, for anyone in the UK at the moment to walk into a football ground and sing at anybody else about poverty when you see what's going on in the UK, forget football and forget tribalism and whatever it is, but for anybody to walk into a football ground, or anywhere for that matter, and start singing towards another set of people about poverty, when you see the way the UK is being run at the moment and you see how they're being literally ran into the ground, is mind-blowing to me, Phil. And it's not just a Liverpool thing. It's just mind-blowing to me that you would be standing beside someone one week protesting against Boris Johnson and what they're doing, the Tory government. And 2 days later, you're in a football ground 100 metres from each other and you're telling each other, you know, who's in less poverty. They're bragging about who's in less trouble under this government. It's a bit mental.
Well, where do you want me to start? It's not a bit mental. It's the English condition in a nutshell. It's like the nothing. They're so mad in a very English type of way, right? And this type of madness that goes on. Like, I know Davo's upset by it, but like at this point in time, you know, the problem is Liverpool fans have screamed loudest about this type of chanting, right? And it's just saying now is, well, that's a way to get it at Liverpool fans. And to be fair, it's a way of getting at Liverpool fans, right? So if you're a fan and another fan base, what are you there to do when you go to a match? You're there to wind up the other fans. Everyone's been to a match. Now, I'm not saying that you should partake in it. I'm just saying that that's what they're there to do. And I'm not as precious when it comes to, there's some things, obviously, you don't want to, do you think that shouldn't be done? Do I think they should sing the songs? No, like, but it happens, and it's going to continue happening as long as we, as the Liverpool fan base make such a big noise about it on social media platforms, which they do, right? It's brought up by some of the biggest Liverpool accounts as soon as anything appears on the thing. And are you not going to say something about this? You're not going to say this. They should know at this stage. No football program, no football, no network in England ever mentions the chance, ever mentions what's being said, or ever has an opinion on it, right? Whether the people involved in doesn't at all. But it's the big social media accounts, and it just shows again about the social media reality that exists. For those who spend a lot of time on social media, it's one of the biggest things to talk about. When people who don't spend that much time on social media, it's very rarely discussed when I talk about football about mates, like we very rarely discuss, did you hear the chants that were on the ground? Did you hear the chants that were in on television that time you're looking at? Honestly, I'm just being straight about it, right? So when I come back to when you say to me about the English thing and that it's about the poverty and all this type of stuff, they keep voting the Tories in. Like this is like women that they're having strikes and they're having protests and they're having this and they're having that. And then the chance comes around for an election. And then they vote them back in again, right? So, like, this is very much a bizarre representation of what happens a lot across the English mainstream society, that they are all very much, they give an awful lot, people give an awful lot in England. They do so many venerable things that should be recognised and honoured. And then they do the stupid thing of putting the same people who have more or less been abusing them for over 100 years at this stage back in power. It's Stockholm syndrome. I'm convinced England as a nation is suffering massive amounts of Stockholm syndrome, and they're so scared of what different is, because the only time they ever voted for different was when they basically had the same person in a different party doing the same thing. It's Stockholm syndrome. They basically just want to be ruled. They want, there's a psyche that wants them to be ruled and wants people who have very posh accents to tell them what to do, right? Because they take great sort of, I don't know, subconscious comfort in following the person with the posh accent who tells them what to do. And if you look at what is the attraction of Boris Johnson? He looks like Wurzel Gummidge. He looks in worse nick than Wurzel Gummidge. He looks like Wurzel Gummidge who's been stuffed too much with straw, right? And all it is he seems like a bit of a posh clown who says the odd funny thing here and there. And his actions are horrific and vicious. He's one of the most disgusting human beings to have existed in terms of decisions he's made. Yet in the last election, him, his policies and his parties won an absolute landslide. So when you ask me about it, I can't sort of patch together the whole scene, because that's where it becomes so disassociated to the people I know that live in England, the English people I know, right? They're very, very different, but it's there. And that's when you come back to it, I can't patch it together.
Well, to be honest with you, like, I kind of separate them into two things, and I'll get to Kev now in a second. I separate them into two things. If you want to sing Feed the Scousers and all that sort of stuff, right, and, you know, that's all we sang and whatever, right, go ahead, because you're not educated. That's one thing, right? Just it's a simple lack of education. And not even education, it's just a simple lack of, you know, awareness as to a situation that's probably way closer to you than what's going on in Liverpool or the surrounding areas, right? Like, the funny thing is, when the sort of stuff like the poverty shouts come out and Feed the Scousers and stuff like that comes out, right? When you look at the people singing it, where they're from, and you check the level of poverty in that area compared to Liverpool, a lot of the time, it's in more poverty than Liverpool. So it's just a complete lack of awareness. However, if you're singing Always the Victims, right? It should be on the front, and Veranda Cheese is why are people so sensitive anymore over the last 10 years. Who gives a shit? Well, I do, right? Because what you're doing there is you know what you're doing. You're singing about the victims of a football tragedy, right? Now, Liverpool sang a song towards a Norwich player earlier on this season who's on loan from Chelsea, and more or less self-policed themselves and went, right, Grant, that doesn't happen. Because there was an uproar over it. Liverpool fans went, Grant, not going to happen again. Bang, no one's to sing it. But it seems to be okay to go into a football ground nowadays and sing about 97 victims of a football tragedy. And I don't care what anyone says about, oh, no, well, it's not really about that. It's absolute bollocks. It is about that. And if you were going to walk into a football ground and sing that, okay, something should be done. It's like someone else said in the chat there earlier. You'll hear somebody near a microphone or a Premier League game shout some expletive. Sorry if you heard that or you picked that up on the microphone. You'll hear the commentator say. But 10,000 people down the away end or 7,000 in the Anfield Road end at a cup game can sing songs about always the victims. And nobody mentions it. Why isn't the fella on the commentary going, they are singing this. This is the words coming from the away end. And this is fucking wrong. This is wrong. And Nottingham Forest fans, not all of them, right? Although some people in the chat said, no, I'm sorry, but half the ground were singing X, Y, and Z after they went 1-0 down. But not all of them let themselves down massively at the weekend. after walked on by the football club and walked on by the supporters' trust to make something good out of this cup tie, and to, as a mark of remembrance towards Hillsborough and the 97 fans that died as a result. And you still get these people that feel that they can go in and sing this sort of song in a football ground, right? It's not like people will go, what about racism? Completely wrong. I'm all behind players when they get racially abused just walking off the pitch. Good luck, I'm gone, I'm off the pitch. And if your mates want to come with me, great. If they don't, they don't. But there's a big thing about racism in football, quite rightly. But there should always be a big thing about basically singing about people that are dead. Okay, and making accusations against them, despite the fact that they've been absolutely vindicated in their fight for justice over the last 30 plus years. It's absolutely appalling, in my opinion. And people can say are sensitive, and people can say are this, but listen, it doesn't matter. It's not about being sensitive. It's about being right and being wrong and having some sort of education, having some sort of brain and a general awareness as to who you are, where you come from, and actually what goes on in the world. Because if you're seeing that sort of stuff, you clearly don't, or it's pure ignorance, one or the other. Kev, sorry, I went on a bit there.
No, you're fine. Look, I agree with pretty much everything all of you have said. The reason why they get away with it is mob mentality has an awful lot to answer for. When they get into the ground, if you ask a person individually, should this happen? Of course not. And they'll deny that this stuff happens. You had it with Gary Lineker. Gary Lineker was challenged the night of the Leicester game. And he was in the ground, in a studio, and said, I never heard it. You know, absolute bullshit. There's just no way you cannot hear this. When Phil, when you were talking about why Boris Johnson got re-elected, very simple. He got Brexit done. And he stuck behind that. He stuck behind that mantra for 2 years, and that washed away all of his sins. And he got people to turn up on the day. Plus, the way the electoral map is drawn in England, Labour used to be able to challenge when Labour were winning in Scotland, and that was 50-odd seats to them. Now they're not winning in Scotland. They've lost 50-odd seats. They cannot win an election. It's as simple as that. Doesn't matter who the fuck the Tories put up, and they've just proved that. When you're talking about the stuff that happens in grounds, you wouldn't see an away side go to Bradford and talk about a fire and challenge the fans in the Bradford Stadium about a fire. It wouldn't happen. But they know that it will get under the Liverpool fans' skin. They know that it's got a global audience, and they know that the louder they sing it, the more it'll antagonize people, and they'll get away with it because the football authorities, the Premier League, the TV punditry, the TV companies themselves have no interest in getting involved in this discussion whatsoever. Forest, for what they did really well in the build-up to this game, fans learned a lot about what Nottingham Forest did in the late 70s and what Clough did to get basically a small-town club to promotion, title winners, double European champions. The Forest Trust did everything right, and they were let down badly by a couple of things that happened on the game. What the fans sang, absolutely atrocious. And then for some obscure reason, the stewards let all the fans out at the same time. So you had Liverpool fans and Forest fans all coming out of the stadium at the same time, and apparently there was bottles thrown at Liverpool fans, some plastic, some glass, to hit kids and hit people heading towards the coaches. You know, it's nonsense, but it's mob mentality. It all comes back to mob mentality. Everyone going to grounds wants to believe that they're with their mates and they can get away with what the fuck they want for that 90 minutes. Yeah. And then they go back to real life. In the real world, they can't get away with that shit.
Well, it's for me, it's just, I just, like, Davos brought this up, and I just think that, I don't think you're going to stop it, right? But I think if it was brought up during the game, in the studio afterwards, because trust me, Liverpool sang something earlier on the season, and they went on about it for 3 days on Sky, you know. But this stuff seems to just roll off now as if, well, that's just a done thing. And it's not. So, look, I don't think it's going to stop it, but I think every time it comes up, it should be highlighted. And I don't make any apologies for highlighting it here. And some people have said, can we talk about football? We are talking about football. We're talking about a chant. We're in a football ground during a football game that Liverpool played most recently. Most recent Liverpool game. That's what we're talking about. Let's move on, though. Winner, Kev, go.
Winner, Leeds United. Jesse March come into this after replacing Bielsa, and talk about a thankless job to have to come in and do. Lost his first two games on the bounce. And then the way they beat Norwich in a must-win game, they had to win that. To go and then go to Wolves, be 2-0 down, lose four players through injury. And in a madness of a second half, turn a 2-0 deficit into a 3-2 win. And those 6 points could be the difference between them staying up and not. It was phenomenal. I mean, what they'd done in that Friday night football, arguably the game of the season so far. It had everything. It was just one of those must-watch games. And if you haven't seen it, go and watch it. It is unreal.
I think it's a great show. And I'm laughing because Davo was on us tonight. And when they went 2-0 down, Davo went, I can't see these fuckers winning the game for the rest of the season. He said that 2-0 down. They've made three subs. The keeper's on the deck here. He said,
four subs. No players left.
Four subs. They made four subs because one of them went off with a concussion.
Yeah.
We have two keepers here now. Have you both seen this, the Raul Jimenez second yellow card?
Yeah, I have, Kev. And I can tell you one thing. I don't know why they're all talking about was it yellow or wasn't it. It's the fucking most blatant second yellow card you've ever seen again. Keeper comes out, wins the ball and gets clattered. Fucking second yellow
what
all day.
What should Jimenez do? Because Jimenez never looked at the keeper. He was looking at the ball. Do you want your forward to be challenging for that ball? And if you miss it, do you gamble?
Yeah, but he missed it. If it was the other way around, if Jimenez flicked the ball boy and the keeper clattered into him, he's getting booked. He might be getting sent off. There's no one behind him, but he's definitely getting booked. I thought it was a blatant second yellow card. But I just on the keeper's thing, Phil, I should have texted you to put the game on because Leeds brought a goalkeeper on who hands down was worse at kicking the ball off the ground than Simon Mignolet. He could not. He couldn't clear the halfway line.
I couldn't have seen it. I was absolutely bananas drunk. I've been out drinking all day for Cheltenham Gold Cup day. So I'd say now all the lads who hate betting, horse racing and drinking in the chat would be absolutely devastated when they hear that knowledge. But I had a bet on. Have we got any betting companies linked to this show? Okay, grand. So the bet on anyway with Paddy Power and basically, it was Wolves to win and Raul Jimenez to get two shots on target, right? And it was 8-1, right? And had it on and thought, right, we're in the money here, right? This is Wolves are up, and then fucking Jimenez gets sent off. Says, now it's going to happen. Leeds is going to win. Just give up now at this stage. The way the horse has gone to that day, I was just like, right, give up that, and job was done. And that was right. It's right. Some goalkeeper. Leeds have a goalkeeper who couldn't kick a ball and they still win a match. That says all you need to know. Putting money on something is like the greatest. The last time Jonah was spoken in that regards was in the Bible.
I think with regards to Leeds, though, Jesse March has got a bit of a thankless job coming in, just trying to refigure that team into playing something that's not just mental like Bielsa was doing. And I think that win at the weekend, like it sounds an obvious thing to say, but I think it could absolutely be huge for them because it's a comeback win under Jesse March, playing a different way. And they haven't looked like this in months. When they went goals behind, they looked like that is it. It's game over. Now, granted, Wolves have a player sent off, but trust me, I think there's probably 12, 13 teams in this league easily that could play, that could start a game against Leeds with 10 men and beat them with the form they've been in over the last 3, 4, 5 months. But it was absolutely...
Wolves defended like that back four were all wearing blindfolds. They were absolutely fucking atrocious.
Yeah,
man, fucking Sui swinging his foot at it and fucking putting it up in the air. Absolutely fucking garbage.
And they're not the misers, mate.
Yeah, they normally are very Moorsley at the back.
Which player was trying to tell me that they were going to end up in a race for the top four Wolves? Come on, which one was it, Gav?
It was me, because I thought the way they were defending and the way they were keeping clean sheets.
Yeah, they were letting in no goals.
They went through a period of about four or five games. They might have conceded two. You know, they were horrible to play against, and they were quick on the break. And even at 2-0 up, they looked really comfortable. They look really good.
I told you it was going to fall apart. I said, this always happens. They're one of those teams, like Aston Villa was under Martin O'Neill.
But they're all trying it. It's actually funny. They're all trying it because if Arsenal, I think they've Spurs and Chelsea in the next two that are the games in hand. And if they don't win them, you're literally looking at Arsenal, United, Spurs, and West Ham will probably need a win in there somewhere, where you'll have four of them nearly on the same amount of points with about eight games left. Like, and Arsenal were like 3 points clear with fucking three games in hand last week. It could go anyway. But just on Leeds, the goalkeeper was funny. He came on, he literally couldn't kick the ball away the halfway line. I was like, what the fuck's going on here? But they are the big winners of the weekend because, you know, when you see Everton beat Newcastle during the week, and you thought, oh, that's another dagger for Leeds. But Leeds will come back and won that. And it just throws the ball straight back into Everton's court. And we'll have a chat about Everton, I'm sure, towards the end. But Leeds is a good shout, Kev, in fairness to him. Phil, loser of the week.
Lionel Messi.
Yeah.
He's playing in the fucking Leinster Senior League 3C of leagues, right? In a team that has the best players. He's playing with Neymar, Mbappe,
Di Maria,
an EA fantasy football ultimate team in stuck in Leinster Senior League 3Z, and he's managed to come up with 2 goals in 18 games. Like, I don't know, this fella got the goal, got the Ballon d'Or, whatever it was again this year, on the back of an underwhelming season at Barcelona and finally winning the trophy at international level. Like, I'm just baffled. I fancied my chances for scoring 2 goals in League One in that PSG team just by standing around the box. Eventually something's going to bounce off you. You know what I mean? Like, it just for me anyway, him going there was that you can dress it up all you want. He bottled it. He should have gone, if he really wanted to prove something outside of Barcelona, he should have gone and joined up with the Manchester City commercial superstars of the world, or gone somewhere else. Gone Juventus, go somewhere different, right? As bad as Ronaldo's been for United, he's managed to score more than 2 goals in the Premier League, which says it all, really. I think Messi got what, 5 in the Champions League. So to me, and that's the other thing that I look at and go, is this a fair team? Fair thing. So teams in the French league have, you know, shit teams probably just don't fear them because they've never played against them. Well, the teams in the Champions League are still looking at old tapes of Messi, trying to figure out, how do we do it? What do we do? How do we fake this? He's done this at Barcelona. He's done this when the team isn't built around him. And this is always my biggest sort of criticism. When the team's not built exactly around him and to cater for his abilities, he's not the player that he looks like. Whereas if we look at Mo, you stick him into any team, and he's going to do something amazing in them at this moment in time. And to be fair to Ronaldo, he's gone and he changed his game. He went from being an attack-minded winger to a pure classic number 9. And I'm still convinced, and this is not me thinking that Ronaldo's better than Messi or anything. I just want to say, it's not that at all. But I just totally believe that if Ronaldo had gone to Manchester City this year, he'd probably be on twice the amount of goals he scored.
I 100% agree.
And I think he would have made a much bigger difference to Manchester City than doing what he did at United. Honest to God, like, and it just says to me, I just love to see what the motivation is behind Messi at the moment, because he looks like a fella who's playing a series of
he doesn't have any motivation, Phil. He doesn't want to be there. They went through everything to trying to jump through hoops, wasn't they? Didn't he agree a 2 or 3 year deal and he'd be paid over 5 years, and the fucking La Liga rejected it, or whatever the governing body over there, whether it's the Spanish FA or La Liga themselves, rejected, said you can't do that. So they were trying everything to try and get him to stay. He's absolutely doesn't want to be there. I'd say that dressing room, I'd say it's awful. Just a team of prima donnas who look at on that day when they click, they can fucking rip you apart. But it's more and more becoming apparent that it's Mbappe's team rather than the other two lads, and he's obviously going to fuck off in the summer. But you'll go very far away to see an implosion like they had for them few minutes in the Bernabeu for such a talented team. And it should be, just going off on a little tangent, it should be a kind of a marker to maybe people that are looking to leave. Look what happened to Gini, look what happened to Coutinho. And you go to these teams that are kind of not fucking just full of prima donnas. Things can go awry. So yeah, listen, sad to see. I think he's the best ever, but his heart's not in it.
If you in the chat there, Shawnee Lawson reckon he's just staying fit for the World Cup, and Shawnee along with others think that he'll be back at Barcelona next season. I'm going to give you a shout in a sec, Kev. Just with regards to IP Vanish, IP Vanish is a VPN service. The link is in the description if you need a VPN, right? So VPN is, it basically keeps you very secure when you're using the internet. It secures makes your data private, more or less. They encrypt your data 100%. Passwords, private details, communication, browsing history, shielded from getting into the wrong hands, all right? IP Vanish, if you look around, you'll see VPN starting from probably about $7-$8 a month, right up to 15. Go even higher anyway. But you can use IP Vanish on all sorts of devices, computers, tablets, phones, Fire Sticks, anything you want to use on at home or when you're out and about, you can use it on phones and stuff like that. So what IP Vanish have for us is an offer for our listeners and viewers. And if you go to www.ipvanish.com/LFC Daytrippers, they are offering 1 year subscriptions to their VPN service, and it works out around $3.20 per month, which is a really, really good deal. So check them out. Go and check them out. Have a look at the link in the description. And if it's something that suits you, the offer is there from us to you. So I wanted to give a mention to that. Kev, Messi, you know, like Phil has him down as a loser. I just think he looks depressed. He's getting booed around the Parc des Princes. Literally him, Di Maria, Neymar, Mbappe literally stood outside Real Madrid's box for 45 minutes last week while the game was going on in a completely different time zone down the other end, and we just weren't interested. The mix just isn't right there. There's just too many fellas you need to carry when you don't have the ball. It's absolutely unbelievable. What do you think he does?
Leonardo's had an absolute mare. He's signed players on freeze for astronomical wages. Imagine the deal they must have given Sergio Ramos to go there. He hasn't hardly kicked the ball all year. And nobody would have been happier with what happened at the Bernabeu than him. And he'd have made no secret about it either. They were well soundly beaten by Monaco at the weekend as well. I think it was 3-1 or 4-1.
3-0.
3-0, was it? Yeah. And too many ran the game. You know, they had no fight, no bottle. Pochettino looks like he's lost the dressing room.
Called it unacceptable, Pochettino.
He can call it whatever the fuck he likes. At the end of the day, the players aren't playing for him. And when you've got that much talent on the pitch without any bottle and heart, you've got no chance, especially when you come up against half-decent players. And look at Monaco, that Monaco side with Tchouameni and Ben Yedder up front. They've got decent players. But Messi, I can't see him going back to Barcelona purely and simply because of the performance that Barcelona put in at the Bernabeu. It was the first time this season Barcelona were properly, soundly looking like a Barcelona side against a good team who were top of the league, and they battered Madrid left, right and centre. And the only thing that Madrid were missing on the night was Benzema. You know, and you had Aubameyang, who obviously, you know, down tools at Arsenal to engineer a move, finally turns up, gets goals for fun. Dembele, when he's not injured, looked like an absolute phenomenal player. And Barcelona have a young side. They don't need Lionel Messi anymore. They don't need that wage hanging like a millstone around their neck. The best thing that happened to Barcelona was getting him out. And they should have done it a long time before. You know, he had the commercial pulling power to keep them going for a while, but that wage that he was on, a million a week, That's a millstone around anyone's neck.
Phenomenal money.
Look, he's a great player. He won the Ballon d'Or because he has something like 45, 50 goals in the year. And he's a phenomenal player. He really is. He's a generational talent. He's one of the best of all time, if not the best, arguably. But Father Time is undefeated. And Father Time has caught up with him and exposed him in a bad league. And when he doesn't want to be there, he's proved it with Argentina. He's proved it at times with Barcelona. And he's definitely showing it now with PSG. He's worse than Neymar. At least Neymar will have a goal. He'll try and do something. He might fall flat in his face and roll around 10 times, but he'll have a go at trying to do something. Messi just looks like he couldn't care less.
I've seen him a couple of times.
That's a horrible thing.
I've seen him a couple of times, and he just does look like he's going through the motions. Like, don't get me wrong, I've seen Messi, you've seen him come to Anfield a couple of seasons ago, and we bashed Barca 4-0, and Messi still has some good chances in the game, a good chance near the end with a brilliant bottom racket hitch to actually score and could have put Barca through. But when I see him for PSG, it just looks like Shani said something earlier, like he's just keeping fit for the World Cup. It looks to me like he's there going, I'm going to do this for a year, and then I'm going to go off somewhere else. Let's get this year out of the way. I'll go back to Argentina. I could go back to Barca. I don't know. But maybe age is catching up on him a bit. I'm not too sure. But the interest for me just isn't there for him. And I'm not surprised, because his only interest over the last 15 years has been Barcelona and Argentina. And I think it's hard to shift that. I think it's hard to step away from that. You know, it's a bit like Gerrard leaves and goes to LA Galaxy. I watched Gerrard for LA Galaxy, and you could see he wasn't too bothered.
Well, Tim Vickery I was listening to Tim Vickery on the radio the other day, and he was saying in Barcelona, the fans are kind of, I suppose, happy is the wrong word, but the fact that he's getting billed, it means that, he said, for the first time in his career, he's probably Argentina first now. Club second, that wasn't the case for when he was with Barcelona. Getting Ballon d'Ors and winning European Cups and making sure he was racking up the Ballon d'Ors. Now, it isn't like that. He's, as Kev said, he's no affinity to PSG. It's all about the World Cup. Argentina look like the way they're going. They have a decent side. They look like they're motoring well. The manager knows what they're doing, knows what he's doing. So it's the fans over there are kind of happy enough with the way things are panning out from in PSG, because it's making making Argentina be number one for them rather than his club.
Yeah, he could be don't get me wrong, he could be stuck at PSG, because who would take him and pay him that sort of money, because it's still colossal money he's on over there as well. So, you know, it could be one of those where he's backed into a corner a bit. And does he?
PSG have backed themselves into a corner.
Yeah, but he's backed himself into a corner with the contract as well. Where does he go to PSG and go, listen, I'm not going anywhere else in Europe. Can you let me out of contract and go back to playing in Argentina? And he might let it happen. Let's get through the last couple quickly. Davo, winner of the week?
Crystal Palace.
Nice.
I think, got to it's obviously, it'll be very big for them. Listen, they're after getting to an FA Cup semi-final trip to Wembley, but it's more from the fact that they'd been there before. Like, they tried to go down the route of getting away from kind of relegation, bog ball, fucking hoofing it, staying tight, nicking games 1-0, being hard to beat when they appointed the bar, and that went badly, badly wrong very, very quick. He got sacked after a 1 point and 7 or 8 or 10 games or something like that. And then Hodgson came in. They reverted back to what Hodgson came in. We all know what he's like. Good at the level that he needs to be at, with the likes of Fulham and all the likes of that, West Brom and stuff like that. So for Palace to go away, I was listening to something else today, and the journalist was saying 31 players left Palace in the summer. Now, I went on to the Premier League site. It says 22 left on free transfers that were out of contract in the summer for Palace. So for Vieira to come in, whether it's 22 or 31, whatever, but for Vieira to come in, try and change the style of football and replace that amount of players that have left on free transfers, to get a squad together and change the style of playing to the football they're playing. Like, they've given, let's be honest, they gave Liverpool a fill of it in both games. I think Klopp said after the Anfield game, it's the hardest 3-0 win he's ever had in his career. When we beat them 3-0, the game in Selhurst Park was recent enough. After the first half an hour, they were probably the better side. They gave us they gave us a hard time. We got a lucky penalty at the end to put it to bed. But yeah, so listen, the crowd has been great down there. I think when you watch a game, everyone agreed that Selhurst Park has been bouncing. So for them, with all that rolled in together, Gav, like new manager, an awful lot of players, 30 odd new players. It's changing the style of football. They're safe, they're cruising, they've 34 points. That's, if they didn't win another game, they'd stay up at saying 34 points. If they didn't get another point, they're safe. And he looks like he's doing a really good job. He probably would have been one of the favourites to get sacked early doors in the season or when, before the season started. So I think FA Cup semi-final, fans trip to Wembley. I think Palace, winners of the week for me.
Phil, I know you're not a fan of the FA Cup and Palace are in an FA Cup semi-final, but they did go and they did put everything to the sword 4-0 at the weekend, which is doubly good. But like whether you like the FA Cup or not, they do have a huge overhaul of players in the summer. Vieira is brave and decides to go in and tries to play a completely different style of football to what Hodgson would do, thank God. He's bringing through a lot of players that are young, very exciting, especially in the attacking areas. And putting all your hatred of the cup aside, it's a great reward for them, isn't it? Like, you know, 8-9 months into what they're trying to do, and they're in a cup semi-final. They may not win the semi-final. They may win the semi-final and not win the final. We don't know, but it's a good start for them, and it's a nice little reward, I think.
What is?
The cup semi-final.
Fantastic.
Okay, Kev, what do you make of Palace getting into the cup semi-final?
It is brilliant for him. It's a good reward for the kids, but it's a great example to clubs that if you give the right youth players a chance with the right coaching and the right philosophy, they can do something. And he's bought well. You know, some of the kids, like the young centre-back, I think
Gahey got called up
to the England senior squad this week. And it looks like the right back will probably get a call up as well. Olise looks a proper talent. Eze, they brought in last year, had an injury, and you see he's starting to play a bit now. Zaha looks like he's reinvigorated himself, and they brought Edouard in from Celtic. A lot of English players were linked, English clubs were linked with him. And Palace stumped up the money and paid good money for him, 20 million, I think. And he's been knocking around the France under 21 scene for a while. So they bought well, but I think they might be slightly disappointed by the points return in the league. But the cup is a massive reward for them. They're a good side to watch, they're an entertaining side to watch. And that place, when that ground, when it gets going, it's a brilliant ground. So
not only that, it gets going, but you know, they were getting going under Hodgson, which is difficult, but they're actually getting a bit of reward for turning up every week and being noisy because they're actually getting some football to watch, in fairness to them. So yeah, no, yes. Fair play to Palace, and they were really good at the weekend. They really were.
Great reward.
Yeah, great reward.
Great reward.
Kev.
Fantastic. Loser reward of the week. Getting to play a match.
All right. Yep.
Fantastic.
Ooh, shut the fuck up, will you? Kev.
In a cup that nobody gives two fucks about.
Kev, loser of the week, please.
Frank Lampard. He's just a gift that keeps on giving, is our Frank.
He really is.
I don't know what the hell he wanted to achieve with his rant after getting tonked 4-0. But hanging your players out to dry, going into an international break where you're not going to play a game for 2 weeks, is not good man management.
He done this at Chelsea.
And what happened? He got the boo. You know, and he's not dealing with Chelsea player mentality. You know, he's dealing with fragile players who know they're playing shit, don't need to be hung out to dry in public by their manager who's been brought in to make sure they stay up. And you look at their fixtures now. Where is it? Where did I write it down? You got West Ham away, Burnley, United, Leicester, Liverpool, Chelsea, Leicester again, Brentford and Arsenal. Now, their saving grace might be that Watford are below them. That might be their saving grace. But Jesus Christ, they look like they're, as soon as they go one down, their heads drop. They look like they're having a fucking notion. And I mean, what he said, he's right. They don't have the balls for it. But it's something you say in the privacy of the fucking dressing room and you keep it in there.
It's not what there's Frank no need Lampard for it does. To get out. He done it at Chelsea.
Yeah. And now is it
at Chelsea, he came out and he started calling out players.
Yeah. Is he protecting brand Lampard? In either way, if you're a chairman of a club and you're seeing the way he's acted, are you going to entrust him with your club? And these clubs are worth hundreds of millions of pounds. He's not doing himself any favours. You know, he might think that he's trying to protect himself by hanging the players out and saying it's nothing to do with me. He's the one who picks the team. He's the one who puts the players out on the pitch. And yeah, the players have to carry a lot of the responsibility because they're the ones who crossed the line. But he's got two fullbacks that they signed in January. One of them's really highly rated. Now, the Ukrainian kid, we don't know what kind of mentality he's going to be in, to be fair. But the kid they brought down from Scotland, he has to be able to do a better job than Seamus Coleman. Seamus Coleman's legs are
gone. No. The young lad came on in the cup game, or played in the cup game, and Lampard took him off at half time and said he wasn't doing what he was asked to do.
For fuck's sake.
So this isn't a shock. Like, he looked broken to me at the weekend. He's calling out players. He's going on an average goal there and a fluky goal and another average goal. And you're kind of going, well, if they're average, how fucking bad were you? If they were average goals, you'd be better off coming and going, we got beaten by three really fucking good goals today. But he didn't. He's basically telling you that you don't have to do fuck all to score against Everton. And he's going to stand there and then he's going to call out the players. He looks like, to me, somebody that the size of this job and the task and the thankless task he has is slowly, slowly dawning on him. And they were blessed to get out with a win against Newcastle. But I'll go back to it. They lose their next game and it'll just go fucking mental. Davo, I don't even know if he, I don't know if he keeps them up. If they go down, I don't even think he stays there.
Oh, no, if they go down, he'll go. Listen, I'd love nothing more than to be wrong. I hope they go down. But I think they'll stay up. I think they'll have enough to stay up. Just purely for the fact of it's Watford and Burnley behind them. Like, Watford and Burnley have to put, like, I know Everton have games in hand. I just think Kev read the fixtures out there. They play Burnley and Brentford. That could be easy 6 points for them. Now, listen, it might not be, but, like, that you could be looking at 6 points there. That was a huge win the other night, especially in the manner they got it. Now, listen, I totally take the point. They went and turned up at Palace then a couple of days later and got absolutely fucking smashed to bits. With their strongest side, really, I think. But yeah. Injuries and suspensions. I think they're better than Burnley and I know the fixtures are bad. I think they're better than Burnley and Watford.
But they have two games in hand to Watford and a 3 point gap.
Yeah. So I think they'll probably stay up. But listen, he didn't do a great job at Derby. He did an all right job at Chelsea, bringing you through, but he'd no choice because they had a transfer ban, so he had to throw a few young lads in. But that kind of petered out then at the end. It was kind of the sack was coming from a few weeks out. So yeah, listen, I hope I'm wrong. I hope they get down, but I think they might just stay up
by default. Nearly, Phil. Lampard has come up loads of times on this show, and he's just for me, Phil. He's just not the man you put in a job if you want to stay up. You need
for me. For me, Lampard has won every week. He's been the biggest winner of the week since we started this show, and his winning streak continues. I disagree completely. He's a loser. Lampard needs the payoff. Right? He doesn't want to be tired of this, so. You can see he's working his way towards the exit door, and he's probably got something lined up already in terms of where his next job is going to be. And there'll be this common thing that nobody can fix everything, so it's not going to impact. It's not going to impact his employability stakes because he's Frank Lampard, and Frank Lampard's related to Harry Redknapp, and there's always going to be a job for Frank Lampard, just like there's always a job for Steve Bruce. There was always a job for Alan Corbisty. There was always a job for Alan Pardew. There was always a job for all these lads, nondescript, useless, fucking shite bag managers who never did anything at all in their whole careers as football managers, bar occasionally keep teams up or keep teams up or just hang around the 15th, 16th position in the Premier League. They love these lads because at one some stage they were great players, and that's it. That's it. So if you turn around and say the Lampard's do it isn't. Everton are an absolute sack of shit. They got knocked out of a shit competition. All that matters, if he wins two games, they stay up. That's all that matter. He'll walk away from Everton at the end of this and say, it's not for me, good luck. And that's all.
I don't know. I think if he keeps them up, I genuinely think the Everton fans will have him down as some sort of messiah and will absolutely call for Frank Lampard to be back to the absolute hilt in the transfer
market. Like they can't, Gaff. I don't know whether I was reading that wrong. I think even if they stay up, they're in serious, serious bother.
Financially
with Premier League rules. The rolling 3-year scale that they use. About, I think you got post 100 million loss or 110 million. I think everything
they're around 260.
Yeah, I think the figures that are, I don't know whether they have been released or are due to be released. Everything are smashing through that fucking door with a sledgehammer, with an extra 100 million debt on top of that. So even if they stay up, it's another like, who can we sign this summer? Right, we can find another Demarai Gray for $1.5 million. Can we find someone else? They won't have loads of money to throw around. I think they're the last I read, or the last time I did some research on it, they're the worst team in the league for wages to turnover. I think they're high 80s, which is not how they run.
89%.
Yeah, which is not how they run a football club. They're in serious bother even if they stay up financially.
Davo, if they go down, they're gone. And it'd be good riddance to them. It'll just be good luck. They'll end up in the League One. That's where their stadium deserves to be, and that's where their fans deserve to be. So I've no sympathy. Won't be sorry to see them go. Just saying, like, I've no interest. Like they bring nothing to anything. They've been one of these teams that have just been fucking meandering around. They're like, you know when if you're in an old house and there's a dead mouse under the floorboards and you don't know where the smell is coming from, right? They're the dead mouse. That's what they are. They've been hanging around the floorboard since 1994. Just, you can't get rid of them. You just can't get rid of the smell. So hopefully we're going to put new floors in this summer. We never have to deal with the dead mouse again. That's all of what we need to talk about.
They need another Hans Eggers to be playing against, Phil.
I think whether they go down or stay up, I think Wayne Rooney gets the job next season. Anyway, and that'll be the crack as well. Right, that was winners and losers. Fail Econ is our charity. Link is in the description. I keep telling you, I will keep telling you. Donate if you can. If you can't, take the link from the description. Mates, friends, family, send it to all of them. Let them know what's going on. Let them know that they can help us get Fail Econ to €10,000 by the middle of June. And if we do that, it will make a huge, huge difference to a very, very, very important charity. So go and check that out. Anything else before we go, Kev?
Nope, all good.
Good. Anything else before we go, Davo?
Nope, all good. All good.
Anything else before Enjoy we that. Go, Phil?
Yes.
I knew you would.
Yes.
What have you got this week?
I sent it to you when I seen it. So anyone that's been listening to this podcast since 2013, when we first started talking absolute baloney on this, particularly on Monday night, right? Uh-huh. They'll remember, I think it was around the Olympics, maybe in 2014 or 20, one of those, whenever.
Oh, no, no, I know where you're going with this. Yeah, now I remember. Go on.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's a show, and it's there, and it's there for everyone to listen to and go back and listen. And we proposed that the Olympics is a big bag of shite, and they should come up with a thing called the World Games, where you take combinations of sport and you just put people into it and see how good they are. And people will want to watch this on the television because they'd be just mad stuff, right? Yeah.
Like, what combination of sport would you like? Are we talking
superstars? Like, remember this TV show, Superstars?
Bit like that, but you're combining random sports. Like, say you make football and horses. You know what I mean?
Okay.
In the dressage ring, you do all this type of stuff. So, lads, it's happened. I rang Andy. I said,
got very excited and told Andy to wake up to you.
I said, we might have copyright infringement here. We could be in for a fortune on this one. So from the 17th July to the 17th of July this year, 2022, in Birmingham, Alabama, the War Games takes place. I am so excited about this. So anyway, Gav, I went off to do loads of research, right? Right. Had to go off and do loads of research. And they have mad fucking games. So they have archery, but it's not archery like you see in the Olympics. It's archery against moving targets. And they don't even know what the targets are. They go into a range, right?
So it could
and
be
they
a have
human. To fly with a target. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Human, no, they can't do it. And have to do shooting at the target.
But if they kill a human with an archery ball, they won't know to kill them because they don't know what the target is.
You get bonus points. Okay. And then there's also, they have canoe polo.
Oh, okay.
What?
Which is basically football in canoes. So they have a horse.
Fucking thing.
Use the paddles to hit the ball, and you can use your hand to hit it as well.
Have they not done that before?
What?
Have they not done that before?
No, that's water polo where there's humans in the water. But this, they've put water polo with canoes into the water, and it's end to end and goals. Oh man, I'm so excited about this. There's dancing in it.
Is there any balloon stuff in it? You know, like keep you up these balloons because Laura Duffy and Red Steve have mentioned the balloons. You know, like world keep you up these balloon competition.
So there's fist ball,
which
is sort of like aggressive balloon ball where you go around and you have to punch the ball around the pitch, right? Like, you're making sports fantastic. Okay. And then there's also frisbee. Frisbee's in it.
Right. Oh, but frisbee, as frisbee. They haven't messed around with frisbee because it's sacred.
No, it's teams with goals. Frisbee goals. It's, this is the best thing ever. Can we do, when the War Games is on, because there's no football on, right?
When
there's
is it on?
Nothing on, right? It's on July 7th to July 17th.
Could can we do a daily update? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, can we do a daily update of the World Games?
We can most certainly do a daily update of the World Games, yeah, 100%.
I'm so excited. I'm half tempted. We can get accredited as journalist, Gav. If we get a sponsor, could we go over to
fucking
the World
Alabama
Games
to look at some fella punching a ball around the room?
We could go.
Nilo has family over there.
Nilo does have his uncle lives in Alabama.
And did he have like snooker with Horleys or anything like that, or like mad stuff like that or anything?
Do you remember floorball you used to play in school? Do you remember the thing with the hockey sticks and you used to play hockey or something it was called? That's actually a sport in this. Oh, this is fantastic. This is honestly, when I started looking into it, I was just going, this is the best ever. There's corfball, there's lots, there's even fighting, and there's like roller sports. They have roller hockey. It's tug of war.
July 7th to July 17th. Well, I'll tell you what, I will let you come onto this podcast any night you want between the July 7th and July 17th, providing that you look up the War Games, watch some of it, and actually come back with information on it.
Oh, well,
results.
It's live on ESPN Plus.
But then you'll definitely watch it.
I'm not going to be watching it.
Yeah. Okay.
So excited.
Okay. There you go. Forced muted on this podcast probably 7 years ago. Podcast was heard somewhere in Alabama, and despite the Trump and COVID, they've got through it all, and the World Games will go ahead in Alabama. Birmingham, Alabama on July 7th to July 17th, live on ESPN Plus. There you go. You learn something new every day. That's literally the definition of you learn something fucking new every day. That has been Winners and Losers from the LFC Day Trippers. I should be back tomorrow with a cop update. We'll have stuff here during the week, don't worry. We're going to try to get a couple of viewers and listeners involved in some quizzes and drafts, but we just have to put some work in somewhere to make up a quiz or make up a draft. So we'll see how it goes. Thanks to Dabo. Thanks to Kev. Thanks to Phil. Thanks for everyone in the chat. It's been a pleasure. Over and out. Sports Social Podcast Network.